to the Jane Q. Public Podcast, a show that focuses attention on the intersection of technology, civics, and American culture. I'm your host, Amanda Qureshi, also known as The Q. Tonight's guest is very special. I say that about all my guests, but this is going to be a good one. Now, I know Neda from the internet, and because of, you know, we ran in similar Muslim-y circles, but she is one of a kind. And if you're not following her, if you don't know her, we're going to go ahead and give you all her, you know, links and whatever in the show notes. You need to be following her and paying attention to her because she is a fucking delight. And not only that, she manages to deliver some of the most important and needed messages today in a format that is hilarious and approachable and welcoming and also incredibly artistic. So let's get started. Hi, Neda.
Hi, Amanda.
How are you doing?
I am great.
This is the first time we've had an extended face-to-face, well, we're not face-to-face, but an extended conversation.
Yes, I follow your stuff on Facebook mostly, and I feel like the Lord brought us together because I really have no idea. I do not remember how we met. I think I just added you because one of my friends who's cool is cool with you, and I'm like, all right, they must be cool then. So here we are.
That's pretty much how all my social media rolls. Like I just, I don't know anybody really. I just, you know people from other people and end up knowing them that way. But you, when I first met you, you were actually kind of a different person. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, I think you're really always yourself. But the way that you presented and the way that you were living and who you were on the outside, at least, was very different. You were doing different things. You were doing comedy and you were working as a nurse at a nonprofit. And what are you doing today?
Well, I'm a nurse practitioner now. And I was doing comedy mostly when I still lived at home. And that's another thing that I use my Instagram platform is talking about abusive family dynamics, particularly from narcissistic family homes, because that's what my parents are. They're textbook. And I lived under that until I moved out when I was 29. And I did not start speaking. Initially, my Instagram platform started as a poll thing, you know, and I'm sure we're going to talk more about that. But now, after, you know, going through a lot of processing on my own, and now I can talk about my experiences without reopening a wound, I feel like it's my responsibility to gift the insights I've learned over time to other women, especially Muslim women that are in the same family circumstances, because I don't think there's enough of us talking about it because there's a lot of shame in it.
Yeah.
And especially coming from like collectivist cultures and all that, you cannot bring any shame to the family, you know, and I don't have any more shame. So here I am talking about it.
Oh my God, we have so many things to cover. Let's start with the family stuff because I want to end on the poll.
Yeah.
So let's start with the family stuff. Now, I noticed a couple weeks ago you made a comment on Facebook about how, maybe it was longer than that, but you said something about how you don't have to do or you don't do stand-up anymore because that was what you were using to cope, right? And I think that that's
yes.
Really fascinating that, first of all, that was your outlet, and that second of all, I think that a lot of us who are creative type people don't always recognize how much we depend on a certain kind of creativity when we are in a really toxic situation. And when we leave that situation, we lose that sort of inspiration there. And we think there might be something wrong with us rather than doing what you did, which was basically recreate your art into something different.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about that kind of transition. And also just, I guess I'm just so fascinated about what it was that motivated you to get the fuck out of Dodge.
So when I started stand-up, I feel like I got a lot more out of it at the time because I was good at it. And because in retrospect, I got no validation at home and I was just chronically invalidated. So when I would like perform and entertain people, now I'm a value, you know, now I'm a value to these people and they think I'm funny and there's a spotlight on me. But when that spotlight is on me, you know, I feel like I'm wearing a suit when I was doing comedy. Y'all see me in a pink sparkly hazmat suit because you will not see who I really am because I'm using this to cope. And that's all in retrospect. I didn't know I was doing that at the time because I was having fun. I was able to make a joke out of every situation I had been in that was like actually painful, but I didn't know how to verbalize that. Like, that's actually painful. So, you know, when I feel like once I started going to therapy and I got out of my parents' house and, you know, I found a happy relationship and all that and a fulfilling one, I remember the last performance I did. I was like, I don't know what to say to any of you because I went through therapy and now all my material is gone and they're all laughing. And I'm like, I'm not fucking laughing. I don't think. I just remember when I was on stage, I'm just like, I don't have to entertain any of you motherfuckers anymore.
Wow, that's fascinating. And actually, I've heard that from people who do comedy many times, that they're really seeking validation. They need that, right? Because they don't get it or they haven't had it. And two, that there is a weight on you, right? That to make people, when you're trying to make people laugh, you do feel this sense of responsibility. And it must have been just, well, you tell me, were you sad or were you relieved or maybe both? I don't know.
It was hard to, you mean when I stopped doing comedy? Yeah. You know, it wasn't that I was sad. It was just I moved on. And I kind of like realized with, and keep in mind, like when I did comedy, it wasn't like, you know, it was an outlet. It wasn't something that I was depending on as like a second income or a hustle or whatever. I wasn't trying to make it. It was really mostly for myself and because I was good at it. And it was fun being the spotlight and getting validation from like, you know, strangers and stuff like that. I like open mics and, you know, making those connections and everything. But, you know, when I left the house, when I got my own place, when I got with my partner and everything, it just felt like I moved on. It just did not really feel like, why do I need to make a joke out of my problems when I can now recognize them as what they are? And that's just me. Yeah. But I'm going to sound very judgmental for a second and just say that the comedy scene, they're the saddest motherfuckers out there. like, there's a reason why, like, you know, suicide is pretty common. It happens more to stand-up comics because they go through a lot of pain.
Yeah. Wow.
So, like, yeah, like, now that I do pole and, you know, I feel like I still get a high from performing. I naturally have a performer-type personality. I love doing public speaking. I love giving presentations. But I feel like now people will see me for who I am, not for what I'm trying to make a joke out of. You know, and now when the opportunity comes, I try to do pole performances because now I'm expressing myself in a way that like is meaningful to me, not for what I'm trying to curate how other people see me.
That's fantastic. I've had that conversation with actually quite a few people recently because I've been on my own journey about that. And there's really something to be said for meeting yourself. And in some cases, we get to adulthood and we haven't really met ourselves even for the first time. And it's delightful to watch people, and for me, especially women, meet themselves and fall in love with themselves. And I see that happening to you. I've watched that happen to you. And you are just, you've turned into this, I mean, you've always been a really cool, creative, funny person, but you have just blossomed. I know that part of that is also just getting out of the toxic environment that you were in for so long. And I want to ask you, and you can tell me to fuck off if it's too personal, but
no.
what was the motivation? Like, what was the final straw? Like, you were 20, you lived there for 29 years with people that were abusive to you. And that's, I mean, like Stockholm syndrome, right? Like, was your breaking point when you were just like, I'm done here?
Well, see, the reason why I stayed as long as I did was it made things complicated with my brother having autism and, you know, feeling like it gave my life a lot of purpose to be like one of his caretakers because, you know, I had a pretty strong bond with him. I was very protective over him. And, you know, when you grow up, like, with no one knowing what autism is, I mean, like, I was 7 years old and explaining to adults what autism is. Because in the early 90s, people didn't really know what it is to begin with. They'd see my brother's behavior and think it's contagious or some shit. So a lot of my identity was around that. And when you grow up seeing your parents treated like they're martyrs for having a disabled son, you know, you think that they are not capable of doing wrong. And also, I mean, as an adult, they didn't really hit me. There wasn't really physical abuse. And, you know, when you're raised hearing all these horror stories of like how bad your parents had it, that they would be locked in closets, beaten, all of that, you're like, okay, well, considering that they're traumatized themselves, they're doing an okay job. No, they were not. Like, they just found a different way to manipulate me that, like, was not what their parents did, but it was something different and a lot more insidious. And again, I gave them the benefit of the doubt so much. You know, I made a lot of excuses for them. I put it on myself to be the patient one, because when I would get angry at them for stuff that I had every reason to be angry with them, but it was always framed in terms of me not having enough patience. And every fight that we would have, every unreasonable thing that they would do and everything, it would be my fault for not being understanding enough. And Muslims, especially around me, were notorious for this because they're always like, have sabr, have patience, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, your parents have done a lot for you. No, they did not. My parents have done piss poor shit. Fuck. Like, they've done the bare fucking minimum. I mean, like, yeah. My mom was the type that she'd be like, you should be grateful that we filled out your FAFSA application for school. Otherwise, you'd have no money to go to school. And I'm like, what the fuck is the alternative? You want me not to go to school? The fuck? Like, and
right.
With that said, the breaking point was February 6, 2017. I came home from a trip from San Diego with one of my friends. And I go to San Diego all the time. And when I came home, you know, I had my bag with me. And as soon as I came home, my mom was just like, you didn't send any pictures of where you were. Every time you go on vacation, you always send us pictures. How do we know you weren't out drinking? I've never had a drink in my life, you know, right? Like, she was just fucking interrogating me like crazy. And keep in mind, like, I was helping pay their rent by this time. I had no boyfriend. Like, I was a perfect, like, brown daughter because that's what I was fighting for this whole time, was perfection to help moderate their feelings. But anyway, you know, after a bunch of interrogation, long story short, I said, I'm a grown woman. You know, I don't owe you pictures of where I was. And she was like, you're not a woman. You're just a girl. And for once, my dad stood up for me. For once, and he's not a good person either, but this triggered my mom to go into a rage. And next thing I know, she threw a chair at me. And at that moment, I just saw the chains come off.
Wow.
And I think, yeah, like I still can't explain it. I feel like I would have been loyal, you know, even if that didn't happen. Like, even though that sounds very traumatizing to everybody else, to me, that was like, thank God. Like, because I just saw these people as like, they're not my parents in that capacity. Like, I gotta go, because in that moment there, literally, I just walked in the door. That's all I did. In that moment, there was nothing that I could say to be like, maybe I had some fault in this, you know?
Yeah. Wow.
So yes, I waited until they went upstairs. My dad was like performing like a ruqiyya on her, like yelling Quran at her, thinking that she's possessed, because of course, like, you know, nothing is ever my mom's fault. It couldn't be my mom acting this fucking psychotic. It's the devil.
Right.
you know, so, you know, I waited till they went upstairs. I exited very quietly. I just ran to my car and I called one of my friends and I was like, I need your sofa for a few days. And, you know, I stayed with her for a week. When I left, my mom was leaving the most threatening ass voicemail. Wow. Saying that, like, she's, if I don't come home right now, she's going to show up at my work, make sure I get fired. And, you know, so that way I learn that I am nothing without her, that she is the reason for my success.
Wow.
And so I had to call my job at the time because I was just finishing my NP. I was a month from finals at this point. And, you know, my RN job was my only income. So I had to call them. I had to be like, hey, my mom is having a psychotic break. Like, you know, please blacklist her, because I didn't know if they were empty threats or not. You know, and that was really humiliating, because I'm like, I don't want my job to know that how fucking unstable they are.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But I had no choice. You know, so that was the beginning of the end.
Wow.
And a month later is when I got my own place. And, you know, even then I basically, yeah, my mom gave me silent treatment for 3 weeks when I finally came home.
Wow.
So.
Well, that is goddamned heroic. first of all. Like, what a badass you are. And also, I'm in awe of how easily you're able to share things that are so incredibly personal and vulnerable. And I wonder why that is. Is that something you've always done? Because it's really a gift. And I see your, you know, I follow you all the places. So I see your Instagrams and your TikToks and everything. You definitely have that quality. I just want to know where it's coming from, because it's so valuable.
I think just time, because I've been, you know, even that whole situation, that was not the reason I went no contact, because again, I still wanted a relationship with my brother. I tried to stay civil with them. With time, things just got worse. I think because I've been no contact 3 years and I've had time to process it on my own, during that time, I learned who I am outside of trauma, because I don't think I would have been sharing this 2 years in, like in 2019, I was having like anxiety, panic attacks, all that shit. I don't think I would have been as open back then, because it would have been reopening a wound. I feel like now it's much easier for me to do that, because like I know who I am outside of what happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And now I can speak about what happened, because it's not this whole thing is not really my problem. This is something that, like, you know, they did, and there's other people who have that kind of shit inflicted on them as well. So I feel like I talk openly about it as I do, because I'm not going to let this situation be a waste. Like, y'all don't get to traumatize me and all that, and then it just ends with me. Like no, a whole lot of other people are going to hear about it, so they have an idea of what to do.
Hmm. Wow. I mean, I love it. I fucking love it. Like, just being able to say, that's not my problem. It's not your, you're 100% correct. And there's no shame in being the victim. Like, I don't, like, our priorities are so out of whack. You know, the way that we look at victims and perpetrators and abusers, and how we place almost 100% of our attention on the bad guy. You know, even if we're throwing hate at it, it's just all the attention goes there. And over again, the people who are surviving are the ones that are basically out there in the wilderness for a long time. And if they're lucky, they can find themselves a little group of people to help them, you know, get lifted up and get to where they need to be. But wow.
Yeah.
And what's so interesting to me is how, like, quickly this happened.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of like, you know, the part that was scary, because I'm just like, if that situation didn't happen, then, like, you know, how long would I be stuck for? But I try not to think about that part too much, just because, like, you know, I do believe in God. I do believe everything happens when the time is right. But yeah, it is scary, because I'm like, if that did not happen, I don't know how long I would have felt like it's my obligation to tolerate it.
Wow. Well, you got out. You got a partner. You found a person that was respectful and supportive and, you know, all of that. And you got some good-ass therapy, obviously.
Yeah.
And so then about, how's it been, a year and a half ago, I start seeing something I never in my life thought that I would see. Something that didn't even ever enter my imagination. Like, it wasn't even that. There was just like, this is not a thing that I thought would be. And yet there it was on my Facebook feed. And what was it, Netta?
My pole dance?
Yes! Now, for anyone who has never seen Netta, how old are you? How tall are you? Like 4 feet? Like, you are a shorty.
Oh, I'm 5'4".
Okay. Close enough. Yeah. So she's a short woman with hijab. And you have this, like, very, like, you know, intense kind of passionate way about you. And there you are. And you're just like a, you know, and you cuss here and there. You're just like this character, and there on this pole you're transformed into something that blew my mind. Like, you were a complete, it's like you became something else. It was art, right? And it was so, even back in the day when you first started, and it was just like all kind of little things that you would, you know, you would achieve and be proud of, and even then I could tell, like, it was coming from inside. How the hell did you get on that pole?
Well, let's see. So I live in North Hollywood, and yeah, that's the first thing. And then, like, you know, I had just finished a 2-mile race in the ocean. A week later, I was like, I want to try something different. So I just saw that there was a pole studio a mile away, and when I saw it, I was like, I want to try some stripper shit. Like, I just envisioned ex strippers or like current strippers like teaching some whole shit, and it's a room full of women, and I get, like, you know, and I would have people applauding me as I shake my ass. Like, that's what I thought it was gonna be, but no, it was like I had to use a lot of upper body strength. And, you know, when I went to my first class, like, it was taught by an ex-stripper who's now one of my close friends, and she was really welcoming. She was super encouraging. Like, even when I came in with my hijab on, like, she was like, oh, one of my sisters is Muslim, you know, it's nice to see you here. Like, they were super nice. And I was like, this shit is hard. And I know stripper shit is hard too, but I was like, this is not the hard I was expecting. And I have a lot of pride. So I was like, no, if this is hard, I need to come back and I need to know I can do this. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, coincidentally, the breaking point with my parents where I finally went no contact came. And then I immersed myself in pole. So, you know, it became the thing I did to cope. But I was coping in a way where I was like, not in a way that this is my escape, but more like I'm doing the thing that's giving me some confidence, because I felt like with the situation I was in, you lose a lot of your autonomy. You don't realize how much of your bodily autonomy is lost when you're like in that kind of abusive situation, because you have to tolerate that. Like, you can't believe you're your own person. They condition you to believe that you're a part of them.
Yeah.
And so, like, I feel like when I started doing pole, it helped me really feel the body I was in. And, you know, some people achieve this by having a hoe phase. That was not on the table because I was in a committed relationship and still am. But there's other ways of, like, reclaiming an autonomy that does not necessarily involve sleeping around, which for some people it's empowering, but it just was not, that was just not for me. Yeah. So, you know, this was a thing that really just helped me just be like, be comfortable in my body.
Yeah. And what's so good about it is that it was a thing that was actually, when you were at a very low point, it was actually building you. Like, you could, you know, you would feel yourself getting stronger. And that, when you're mentally down, to have that kind of physical experience could only have helped you get back to where you needed to be.
Yeah. And, you know, I started posting on Instagram because I was like, I didn't understand the implications of Instagram at the time. I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to post some videos that I feel like is appropriate for, like, my boundaries. And it just shows, like, the acrobatic elements of it. I was like, I'll post these, whatever. I'm doing some hard things here. And, you know, a few months later, I do my first recital or whatever. And then next thing I know, my videos are on some Egyptian dude's, like, profile telling me about how I'm, like, going to hell and shit. And, you know, and then, yeah, my account blew up because I had a lot of angry Arab dudes go after me. So,
wow.
And then, now I got 127,000 followers, so I'm like, joking with y'all. Shit.
Okay, so, you know, here's the thing. I know you get a lot of attention because you wear hijab, and it is a novelty, right? Like, who ever thought they were going to see that? But I want you to know, and I hope you know, and I think you know, that even if that hijab was not on your head, you would still be good at it, and people would like it, right? And I think that's really important, because, yeah, I think it's awesome that you are willing to wear your hijab wherever, that you're standing, you know, against stereotypes, that you're devoted to your faith, but also you're not just that. And when I see you perform, and when I see the photos of you, I'm really awestruck at how beautiful they are, and that is all coming from within, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about how, like, you've been doing this for what, for a year and a half?
No, it's almost, it's gonna be I went to my first bowl class like 3 years ago, August of 2019. Ooh. But I started immersing in it like, I would say October, that's when I started taking some private sessions.
Okay. Even in that short time, I've seen you kind of, I mean, artistically, you're growing, right? You're evolving very quickly. What has been sort of your trajectory? Tell me about your, like, sort of artistic trajectory. When you first started, like you said, you were going to, this was ho shit. You were like, I'm going to go wear some. And you do. You have the 6-inch heels. I've seen them. Sometimes you flash those around. But, you know, you're not, that's not the center of what you're trying to do. You became, you know, you started to appreciate it as an art form. So talk to me a little bit about how that's come about, because I've seen some gorgeous stuff from you lately, and I want to know how you got from, you know, barely able to hold yourself up on a pole to being photographed underwater, you know, like some kind of fabulous betta fish.
Well, I think that's how, like, I learned to, like, heal, like, my inner child, is because I remember, like, you know, I grew up a swimmer, but I was always envious of, like, you know, the synchro swimmers, like the girls that were, like, doing all the graceful stuff. Yeah. Like the water ballet, you know, anybody who was like in ballet themselves or like dance or anything, like the gymnasts as well. Like that's the kind of stuff I wanted to do. But like swimming was the most affordable option at the time.
Yeah.
And I became very strong. But like, you know, swimming is about like strength and endurance. Like there's not a lot of room for creativity. So I feel like with my style, I feel like it's connecting to what I wanted when I was much younger, especially as a girl. So like when I'm doing like, you know, the more ballet inspired moves and the more like flowy stuff, it's just like it's a reminder of like I'm doing the thing I wanted to do a long time ago. Mm. And I stick with it.
Yeah, that's fucking awesome. Did you, like, I was going to ask you that, actually. Did you ever have any training in dance?
I mean, I had basic ballet like when I was a kid, but I went back to like level 1-2 ballet when I was like 20.
Oh.
You know, so I mean, like, yeah, with the toe points and all of that and, like, you know, the musicality, like, I'm familiar. But, again, that was a hobby at that time. So, I mean, I have the bodily awareness, but, I mean, I was never, like, you know, advanced in anything ballet. I'm just very familiar with the basics.
Yeah.
And I show that when I dance, and I'm very proud of that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's lovely. It's just great. I love it. And I'm so proud to know you. You have no idea. So.
Oh, thanks.
I want to talk a little bit now about, because my show is about how technology impacts our society. And I think you're a really interesting kind of case study because you have, I've watched in real time as you have navigated both the very, very best parts of social media and the very, very worst simultaneously, yeah. Right? Like all of this gorgeous, wonderful self-expression with loving, supporting people all over the world, you know, cheering you on. And on the other hand, just vile, disgusting, misogynistic shit. How are you doing it? How do you manage that?
Well, let's see. So, I mean, when I first got the kind of attention that I did, the part that was scary was just like, okay, is my safety compromised in any way?
Yeah,
that part I was like, you know, how do I, like, do I have to be scared? I don't know. You know, and there was ways I learned how to, like, you know, protect myself, take extra precautions and all that stuff. But as far as how I deal with it emotionally, I don't really feel like I'm that impacted by what people say about me, because first of all, when I post on TikTok, I do not look at the comments, just because it just takes up space. Like, yeah. Some of the stuff said about, like, you know, my body in particular, okay, it looks way too familiar to the kind of stuff my parents have said about me. So, like, it's familiar, and I don't want to deal with what it could trigger, and I just won't, like. But Instagram is a lot more supportive. I have gotten plenty of hate messages, but I also get a lot more supportive messages, and on Instagram, I limit who can comment, I limit who can message me. I'm protective of my space. I know there's a lot of people that find what I'm doing very shameful, and mm-hmm. they can deal with that. You know, it just doesn't bother me anymore. And I think part of it is because, like, you know, I went through the worst rejection already, like with my parents, like wow. A lifetime of that. A part of me is just like, y'all think you hurt me? The fuck? Like, you know,
I do know.
Like, right. Like,
yeah.
If you've already been through one of the worst pains possible. I'm like, please try me. Emotionally, I just really feel like y'all are not relevant to me. Bye. And of course, what also helps me is the block button. I'm very generous with the block button. Like,
you get a block button. Get a block button.
Yeah, I'm like, I did not pay $1,000 for this phone for y'all to stress me out on it. I don't really do astrology stuff, but I'm a Capricorn, so it's like when I really embrace the whole everything they say about Capricorn, that they make everything is based on whether it's a sound financial decision or not. And it is financially not sound for me to invest emotionally in what y'all are trying to do if I'm not getting paid. Like, I'm not going to pay for this labor to interact with y'all. Shit. Like,
absolutely not. Yeah. No, I mean, that's incredible. Maybe you're the perfect woman. I don't know, but like everything you're saying, I wish everybody else would do. I mean, maybe you should just have this podcast going forward.
Hold on, I gotta open a can of cat food because they're
yes. Yes, yes. That's another important part of the Nenda bio, is that she is, in fact, a crazy cat lady.
Yeah. But anyway, I think other people on social media might have a harder time doing what I do and being public, because there was a time when being socially desirable or whatever benefited them. It protected them, I'm sure. Like being the popular kid in high school, or being like, you know, the favorite kid in the family. So they probably are more scared of what people say because they're depending on it for their social status, right? Yeah. But for me, I'm just like, I have been shit on by multiple statuses or whatever. And I feel like when you grow up the scapegoat and you've already been shit on in multiple aspects, it's just like, well, like, might as well have fun doing it then.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but that's right. It is right. I guess one of the things that I wish we all could do is step back and just realize how much true bullshit is on the internet. Like we all invest a lot of energy into this bullshit that there's really no foundation for. You know, you're exactly right. It's perfectly okay to just turn it off and say, yeah, nope. Not relevant. And I wonder, why do you think more of us don't do that?
I don't think there's an explicit answer to this. I just really think it just depends on what you've been through in life. Like, I think if you've already been through the worst and what people, like, if you've been through people rejecting you, you see that, okay, the worst case really isn't even that bad. Like, I think just some people have not experienced rejection enough to not be so invested. And I think it also just comes with age. I don't think that I would be responding to all of this as the way that I do if, let's say, I was still in college. And I think that a lot of people, especially on TikTok and all of that, like, they're still, like, early and mid-20s. Even in the absence of abuse, like, I was a lot more reactive in those years.
Yeah.
I feel like now, because, like, you know, I'm older, I've seen some shit, I've worked long enough, I've interacted with enough people, I feel like just my foundation is very different from the early 20s. And I feel like the people, especially in their early 20s, they have not been through enough to see what's relevant and what's not.
I battle with that all the time because, you know, I do think ageism both ways is a problem. And I think there's a lot of wisdom with youth, but I also have to agree that there's a body wisdom that comes with age. And that body wisdom says, I've been there, I've done that, fuck off, right?
Yeah.
And as much as I miss the energy and the, you know, whatever, I could lose weight easily or whatever, now what I really appreciate is like that ability to listen to my body and do what I know is best for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's just how I maintain a level head. It's like, I have learned that my intuition is worth listening to.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. it's a beautiful feeling, right? I think so much of our culture and our communities is really about undermining women's self-confidence in themselves and in their bodies. And I understand why it's considered so threatening, the things that you do, right? Because that's really what you're about, is that embodiment. It's coming into yourself fully.
Yeah. And I feel like when I was younger, I was compulsively exercising. I always felt like I had to be productive because I don't think I was able to just sit with myself. And I just had to tire myself out enough that I don't feel. And now I'm like, it just feels good to just be comfortable, like, in my body and at home, and we just be comfortable with nothingness sometimes.
Well, I know that's right. So what's next for you? You're working as a nurse practitioner.
Yes.
Do you have, like, an actual strategy, you know, for what you're doing with social media and poll, or are you just letting it unfold?
I don't think I have so much strategy because, like, I don't really feel like I have to have. It takes a lot of pressure off that, like, you know, my main income is a nurse practitioner.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, I do get paid for views on Instagram. I don't get paid much, but it's like there's been some months that I've made a lot of money, and then there's some months where I just make like some jump change. So, I mean, it makes a big difference that I'm not getting, you know, I'm not depending on this for income. So I'm just like, I just kind of go with how I feel about posting. I don't really think too much about strategy right now, at least. And that takes a lot of pressure off. And, you know, I also learned that I have to have boundaries with myself on how much I post and what I post.
Yeah.
For me, the recent boundary I had to put was I took away the option for people I don't follow to respond to my stories because it was just too stimulating seeing all these people respond to my stories, you know, that are not my friends. Also people dumping because they see me being open on social media as like an invitation for them to talk about their problems to me, because obviously I understand them. When I do not, I'm not a therapist. I make that very clear. I'm only speaking from my experience. I don't claim to have answers for certain things. The way I dealt with my family can get someone in a lot of trouble, you know, that they might not be equipped to deal with. So yeah, as far as like what's next, I mean, that's just being comfortable with doing what I want to do and not so focused on what's going to increase my engagement, what's going to grow my profile, all that. I know my engagement has probably taken a hit since I put that restriction on my messages. I don't really care though.
You know what? For what it's worth, I don't think art is a strategic endeavor, right? I think that it's right that you shouldn't have a strategy on your art. And I think that giving yourself the freedom to create without that pressure is the best thing you could possibly do, especially as somebody early in their practice, right?
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Okay. So let me go real quick.
Yeah.
I absolutely procrastinated on praying Usher, and I have 15 minutes.
We can wrap it up. We can wrap it up.
I mean, I'm fine. I'm fine just taking 5 minutes to pray, and I can come back, or I'll leave it up to you.
Yeah. Whatever you want to do.
Okay. Give me 5 minutes.
Okay.
I'm back. Amanda.
Oh, Netta.
Yeah, I'm
Jesus
back.
Jesus Christ. I was doing the thing. And then I realized that I was muted. Jesus Christ. This podcast is out of control. Okay, here's where we are. I want to ask you, you're a grown-ass woman, so you've been around a while. So how you think over the last decade, you've seen like our society start to change, and what has been the impact of like technology on all that?
I think that, like, at least from what I've learned, I think that we forget that we might not be meant to interact with that many people at once.
Whoa. Yep.
Because when, at least that's what I learned about myself, is I was like, you know, normally my impulse to interact with people is usually fulfilled on text or in person or a phone call. But when you're depending on a social interaction from like Instagram or TikTok and so on, it's way too many messages, it's way too many comments, and then you feel that same impulse to respond to all of it. And I don't think that we're ever meant to do that. Wow. It's just because with how many people have access to you, that many people would never have access to you in person, where, you know, your usual like social impulses would be. But like, your brain cannot tell the difference between an in-person interaction and a phone interaction. And that was one of, you know, I have a Muslim therapist that she herself was a target of online harassment. Mm. And she had told, that was the thing that really helped me, was that she had told me that when you see certain comments and certain messages on your phone, your brain cannot differentiate that from an in-person interaction. So it's going to feel like it has the same effect, when really this is just a stranger who's trying to have access to you.
Yep.
But it's just that much in your face. So you can't really differentiate between an in-person attack versus a meaningless phone attack.
I talk about this a lot. There's these researchers who put their subjects in the MRI, right, to get like brain scans. And they would read them like just statements that contradicted like their deeply held beliefs, right? And the parts of the brain that light up when people hear things like that is exactly the same part of the brain that lights up when you are being physically attacked.
Yeah.
Like, this is like documented, right? And so we're out there just absorbing this unprecedented amount of shit. And we're in a state of perpetual fight or flight. How are we going to self-govern like that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just, you know what? This is a beautiful tie-in to the, you know, the whole previous segment about body awareness. If you are truly aware of how your body is, any one of us at any time can just stop and like realize my jaw's clenched, my ass is tight, right? I'm having a physical response to this thing, and we're just so tuned out. We're tuned out of our bodies. And so we're not paying attention to how this is affecting us, or not, if you're Netta, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, it just took time, you know, to be like, this is overstimulating and I don't feel like making space for this because it brings me no benefit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Aside from taking up space in my brain and keeping me away from the stuff that actually does bring me benefit.
Why do you think so many people don't do that? Like, I wonder, because I do this too, right? I'll just be like, well, you know, I am not happy right now, and I can immediately cut this out, and I know it will help me get back on track, right? But like, so many people don't have that impulse. I mean, it's like a cultural thing.
I think it has to do with the flight or fight response. It's hard to, I can only speak for myself. I just know that for me, like, I mean, when I was in college, you know, like when social like interactions were their most relevant, I think I probably would have responded differently to things like TikTok and Instagram and so on. I don't really know how social media and those interactions have shaped development, because it wasn't there, you know, in my most formative years. Just Facebook was there. And Facebook at that time did not have a lot of room for drama, because at that time it was limited to just college students, right? So like, there wasn't the whole right-wing presence on Facebook. You couldn't find the anti-vaccine crowd, all that QAnon shit. It wasn't there at that time. So I really don't know. I just know that I had a lot of time to develop outside of social media presence. And I think that's just the difference, is that for a lot of people, it's ingrained into their development. And it's a lot of stimulation to like ingrain in that development, and therefore it becomes harder to navigate. It's just because it's just so stimulating.
God damn, you're smart.
Yeah. Well. I also think it's like, you know, with how much like stimulation we have, I think that people just have not been able to face the discomfort in just sitting with themselves and not responding to people and not interacting with people. Like, it becomes uncomfortable to just sit with yourself and not have to, you know, depend on that. I mean, for me, like when I'm getting bored at work or when I'm sick of it, like, you know, of course I start compulsively checking Instagram because I'm looking for a stimulation that doesn't have to do with work, you know, but I'm aware that I'm doing that. A lot of people can't put words on that yet.
I have a word for it. Mm-hmm. It's called Zen. Literally, that's the entirety of Zen, what you just said. Yeah. That, right? It is that. It's just sitting your ass down and shutting the fuck up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is an underrated thing. And it's one of the hardest things. I mean, it's the easiest thing to do and the hardest thing to do.
Yeah. And it's like once you experience it, and once you experience that, like, you don't really need the social media stuff. It just, things become just easier to manage. Like, I think I had time to just have something different to compare it to, that like, oh, wow, look at this. Life goes on without Instagram. This is cool.
Yep. Yep. It's true. Well, in closing, I would like to nominate Netta for Queen of the World. No, I mean it. You're just so right on, man. I just think you're right on. And I'm proud to know you, and I'm thrilled to watch you, you know, develop and become, you know, who you are. And it's been a joy to know you online. And you know, I think that is an underrated thing about the internet, because we've never been in person together. And yet I do feel like I have this relationship with you. It's not a normal, regular human relationship, but I know who you are, and I love you for who you are.
Oh.
Or maybe that is a human relationship.
Well, I think with Facebook, it is a little easier because there is a friends only option. You have more choices to limit who can see your stuff and who can't. And there's more room for interaction. And I mean, also, we have some mutual friends that can attest to the badass bitchery of both of us. one of them is Sean, which I have also not met her in person, but we talk all the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. I shout out to Sean.
Yeah, I've got Soror here too, but like, we actually do know each other in person. We live in the same city.
That's right. That's right. Oh, we need to all just have like a big old reunion.
Yeah, sleepover. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Absolutely. All right. Well, Netta, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And I, you know, genuinely am so grateful for knowing you. And I wish you all of, you know, the best and whatever you're going on to do. And please come back on my podcast. And
hell yeah.
Yeah. All right. And yeah, everybody else should definitely follow and know Netta. But don't be a dick to her, because she will block your ass.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
All right then. So we'll be in touch. This was really fun.
Okay. All right. Thank you.